You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702. Travel.
It's now 9 minutes to 2 o'clock, and this afternoon we're joined by Iga Motilska, and she is a travel enthusiast. You can check out her travel and photography blog. It's igajourneys.com, and oh, you are going to be tempted to add even more destinations onto your bucket list. And today we bring you something that is local, that is accessible and affordable, and this is none other than the Golden Gate Highlands National Park. I'm seeing a theme, Iga. Last week it was the Makonjwa mountain range. You're in a geological mood because now we're going to another mountain range. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Absolutely. And nature is so therapeutic, especially in times like these when we're cooped up at home. As you said, it's affordable and it's in the northeastern free state, which very often gets overlooked. So definitely just an excuse to go traveling and to be outdoors.
It is one of my favorite little getaways, you know, like for a weekend. I could even finish work at 3 and get there just in time to, you know, have dinner and then get a whole weekend in because it's in that clearance area. So first, let's look at just the geology, why it's called Golden Gate, for instance. This is informed by the geology in the area.
Yes, definitely. So the name Golden Gate originates from the two cliffs that face each other on either side of the thoroughfare road. And at sunset, the yellow sandstone really becomes such a rich golden color. It's absolutely spectacular. So I must say that going for a sunset walk is definitely worth it. And there are three main layers of rock that you can see in the national park. There's the red layer, and this one was created around 2 million years ago. And this happened when the swampy river deposited mud-like sediment. And then, of course, over time, this turned to rock. Then, 196 million years ago, the area dried up and became a desert. And so that's why the sand dunes became weak rocks. And this results in the yellow sandstone deposit. Mm-hmm. This is, as you mentioned, now known as the Clarence sandstone. And then 183 million years ago, the area was actually volcanically active, something that not many people know about. Oh. And this, of course, changed the lower sandstone layer to quartzite and basalt. And there are so many beautiful caves in the area and overhangs that were obviously formed due to the soft rock and when it eroded and was weathered away. Mm-hmm. And so really, there's so much to see. There are beautiful peaks, great picnic spots, and a variety of different hiking routes.
Absolutely. The one that I tend to do, as they say, you got to go back. You got to go back to some of these places is the Wodehouse Peak. That is it's a beautiful hike. It's got a level of challenge, especially when it comes to the ascents and the descents. Oh my gosh, the descent is it can be torture sometimes depending on which route is open, because they do change up the routes from time to time. There's a part of it that is so steep that you've got to kind of shuffle using your bum in parts, really enjoyable, worth the views once you get up there. But as you say, it's got quite a number of routes. Which ones do you think are particularly noteworthy?
So Mushroom Rock and Brandwach are certainly the easiest. Mm-hmm. They'll take between 45 minutes to an hour, and this, of course, depends on your level of fitness. They're definitely the most popular ones. And Brandwach also has chains, so you can use this chain to climb up the rock face. And that really makes for great selfies and Instagram posts. So it's really popular in that regard. And it only has a medium difficulty grading. One that we did, which we thoroughly enjoyed, was Reebok. It's a 28-kilometer hike over 2 days. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But something else that is really worth visiting is the Cathedral Cave hike. It takes around 4 hours, but what's really great is that you end up in a cave. And so that's really quite interesting as well. And the difficulty grading on that is also quite low. So it's easily accessible, even if you're hiking with your children and teenagers.
Yeah, so let's look at that Reebok hike, because it is, for instance, with the Wodehouse Peak, it does split at some point, and you are able to continue on with the Reebok if you're going to do the two-day hike. What can we expect over those 2 days?
Yes, definitely. So day one is about 4 to 5 hours, and it also follows the Brandwach route higher up. And then, as you mentioned, it does split. We overnighted in the Reebok Hut, and it's alongside the river. It's great because it's affordable. We pay just over 1,000 rand. But something that you have to prepare yourself for is that there's no electricity, and there's certainly no warm water. So you do get supplied firewood, and you can make a fire in the donkey shower that can heat up the water for food or for showers. And the water in the kitchen is actually drinkable, so that really helps. There's a whole bunch of utensils and pots and cutlery. There's a camping stove, so you can definitely prepare your food there. And what's really great, though, is that the national park will carry or transport your overnight bag to the hut. So unlike the otter or the oyster catcher trail, you don't have to deal yourself walking with that very heavy pack. You just have to take your day pack, which is great. And there are three rooms that sleep six people. It's wonderful for stargazing and for astrophotography, as there's no light pollution in the area. The second day is a little bit tougher because it takes between 6 to 8 hours. There's a very steep 600-meter gradient decline there and many inclines as well. But as you said, spectacular views over the interlocking slopes. And then towards the end, you can just dive into the rock pools to refresh and cool.
Best part.
As you go back to the registration area.
Yes, I think those are the best parts. Just the waters that you encounter along a hike and taking the time just to dip in is just after your feet have been hot and swollen and just sick and tired of your hiking boots, just to dip them in some cool water is really a nice highlight to any hike. But what kind of animals are you likely to see out there?
There are 10 antelope species, and we range from the eland to the red hartebeest. There's also black wildebeest, black stork, springbok, a number of different others, and obviously the grey reebok, which is the name of one of the trails. You can also see baboons and dassies. We also saw virtual zebras on the slopes, which is really quite interesting. But for birders, it's really quite something because there are 257 bird species in the area. The most notable, of course, is the bearded vultures. They've got four eagle species in the area as well, with hawks and kestrels. You might even spot an ostrich if you're lucky. We also saw grey-crowned cranes and a secretary bird. But what's really interesting is that the vultures are fed occasionally at the vulture hive. So you can very often go through and see them snorkeling above, around, if you're lucky. And I mean, it's obviously really important because they're also endangered. So it's a great conservation angle as well.
Wonderful. We're out of time, Iga, but we'll direct our listeners to sandparks.org because that's where you can see everything that we've been talking about, including some of the self-catering accommodation that's available in the area. Like we said, it is accessible just 3.5 hours out of Johannesburg. And of course, Sandparks accommodation tends to be on the affordable side, and there are great scenes and hikes to enjoy. Thank you, Iga.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend.
Wonderful. That's Iga Motilska, and her travel and photography blog is called egerjourneys.com.